Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, our neighbor in Chapel Hill, Adam Jones, is the owner of Millhouse Properties, and that's the local property management company. We might hear a little bit about that, but I asked him to come and talk to us about something else. It's his first novel called Fate Ball. And I hope that he will be able to tell us a little bit about the new book and about why some of his friends in Chapel Hill might be interested in it. Adam Jones, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, tell us a little bit about how a real estate man goes off program and writes his first novel. How'd that happen?
Well, I think I was probably a writer first and didn't know it, and real estate just happened to come along when it did. But I was a graduate of the UNC Journalism School and did a lot of writing during school and had some things published, and then afterwards I dabbled in writing and had some freelance things published.
So, you were in advertising, or what were you doing?
My sequence was in the advertising sequence, and I did do some freelance advertising, some copywriting, but also wrote for a few regional magazines, some travel stories. I went camping here and there and did some travel stories. Then I went on a little surfing trip out in California in my 20s and wrote about that for Outside Magazine and just little things here and there. And then I hooked up with a children's magazine, and they needed some content. And I said, well, I can write a children's story. So I started writing children's stories for them and ended up doing about a dozen over the course of a few years. And they were all little cute, you know, beginner stories about soccer or basketball. And they all had a little lesson in them. So that was what I did most during my days with Eurosport, which is a soccer catalog out of Hillsborough. And that, so those two things got married together.
I do some writing, and I found none of one to be wonderfully satisfying and absolutely not economically sustainable. Is that? But right. You were making a living. Were you making a living writing?
I was not making a living. I was working at the time with Eurosport, and they're soccer.com now, and they're huge now. But when I was there, I think I was their sixth employee hired, and we grew and grew and grew. So I was not making good money writing. I was making, I think, $50 a story. And then I stopped writing for them because they kept expanding the children's magazine, kept expanding into other and other markets. And so I wanted to get a royalty for every market they went into. And once we got past maybe four markets, they said, okay, we're not going to pay you more royalties because it's getting too expensive. So I was never able to make a living writing. It's just been to fill in the gaps and just a little creative outlet.
Well, how did it, so you, but you're still saying I was a writer before I became a property manager or my own property management company.
Well, that's right. You know, I've always enjoyed writing. You know, my father was with the News and Observer for a long time. And I worked for the NNO when they had a Chapel Hill Bureau before the Chapel Hill News was bought out. And so I've always just had a bent towards writing, but I knew, at least I thought, that it was not going to be sustainable to write professionally without being a waiter, you know, full time. So long ago, I decided I would just keep writing as a kind of a sideline thing to do for a creative outlet, and that's kind of what I've done. And although I did put it down for a long time, you know, I started Fate Ball a long time ago, and then life got in the way, and I put it down and stopped writing altogether.
How long? Fate Ball is your new book, the one book we're talking about. And so, when you started that, when you were much younger?
Yeah, I probably started in my early 30s, and I'm 52 now. So that was about 20 years ago when I started writing it, or had the idea for it, I should say. And I would dabble here and there and take some notes, and like I said, life got in the way. I just put it down and didn't think about it for years and years and years, and would pick it back up a time or two. And then before I met my wife, we've been married 10 years now, and before I'd met her, I'd written maybe 150 pages. And so early on in our relationship, I showed it to her, and she read it, and she thought it was quite interesting, although it was based on an old flame, so she didn't like that part of it. But she thought it was good, and I should pursue it. And once we got married, I picked it up and put it down for the first several years And I guess I talked about it too much. And so about 3 years ago, I was talking about working on Fate Ball again. And my wife said, don't mention that book until you finished it.
Oh, that's great.
And so that's when I, about 3 years ago, is when I really picked it up and became determined to finish it. And then got an editor involved and all those type of things.
Well, I want to talk maybe some more about that in a little bit. But now, tell us what you will about the story.
Well, so like I mentioned, Fate Ball is loosely based on a relationship I had at Carolina. And the female character, whose name is Ava, and the male character, whose name is Abel. Abel went to Carolina. Ava went to St. Mary's. In the book, I've changed those places and things just to fictionalize it.
Moved it sort of to South Carolina.
I did move it to South Carolina. I moved it down to—
But it's really happening. If the real events that inspired the book happened in Chapel Hill, the fictional events happened in South Carolina.
Right. And so, so it's loosely based on this relationship that I had at Carolina, and the parts of it that I drew from are the female character is an alcoholic, but no one knows it. And Abel, when he meets her, doesn't realize that she's an alcoholic. He just thinks that she's a wild child and has a lot of fun.
Well, tell us how. Tell us about how they met and the circumstances under which they met and what happened as they met. It was like a lightning strike, kind of.
It was a lightning strike. So the way they met. So the way the book goes, Abel is basically dragged to a fraternity party by a friend of his, and Abel's not a big party guy, and he says that he'd rather practice guitar and work on a Clapton tune than go to a fraternity party. But this friend drags him to the party, and he ends up having a remarkably good time, although he's by himself most of the time, but Abel's having a few drinks and gets a little tipsy, and Abel essentially passes out on the couch in the foyer of this fraternity house. And a few moments later, the front door opens up, and it wakes him up. And he sees these five beautiful blonde girls walk through the front door, and it sobers him up for the moment. And as I say in the book, each girl is more beautiful than the one before. And Ava is the last girl through the doorway, and, of course, the most beautiful of all. And she just stares at him, catches his eye, and he doesn't know why she's looking at him or why she's interested, but she makes a beeline for him and pretty much jumps in his lap and starts to kiss him, but he hasn't said a single word and he hasn't done anything. But it's a unique way that he's never met a girl like this
even
before.
Even I'm an old man. You awaken the adolescent aspirations for me, and this is like a young freshman in college is wet dream. I mean,
right.
Just to have this a beautiful girl
right.
attack you. Well, but it just doesn't happen. And so you made this up.
Well, the meeting, and I got in trouble for that. I was in a writing group years ago, and it was mostly women in the writing group, and they skewered me because of this sexist opening. And they said that it would never happen and that girls don't act that way. And I said, well, they do act that way because this part of the book actually happened to me. And so that writing group, because they were so upset about the way that these two met, led me to write a prologue and a chapter before the meeting chapter. So the reader knows that this girl, Ava, has an alcohol problem. And that alcohol problem, even though Abel isn't aware of it, is what leads to her behavior.
The Abel experiences it without the prologue and just thinks he's died and gone to heaven
right.
to have this beautiful girl be interested in him because he's a little bit of a dorky kind of guy.
Right.
This is where I start with the book. There's a dream come true. And then you turn it into a nightmare.
Exactly.
And how does it turn into a nightmare?
Well, so he does think that it's manna from heaven. This girl literally drops in his lap, and he almost falls in love immediately with the idea, if nothing else. And as they continue to date after this initial meeting, it is revealed that she is drinking more and more, and she actually has a she's a full blown alcoholic, but he's still not aware of it. And as they continue to date over the months, her behavior becomes more and more erratic, and he becomes more and more worried about it. She's not acknowledging that she has a problem, and he is helpless to do anything about it to help her. And so the nightmare.
Well, how does the relationship develop? As Abel doesn't understand exactly what's happening, he's still entranced and having the most wonderful time of his life because he's in love with this beautiful woman, and she seems to be interested in him too.
Well, and
they do all these, you know, mischievous things.
Yeah, they do mischievous things and fun little trips and things, and run off to the beach together. And he kind of turns a little bit of a blind eye to it because she is so out of his league, and he is thinking that this will never happen again. If I lose this beautiful, wonderful person, I'll never recapture anything like it. And so I think he turns a blind eye to it a little bit until it kind of gets to a fever pitch, and her behavior is just completely out of control. You know, 6 months in, she's now experimenting with cocaine and other drugs, but she's doing this before they go out on their dates or before they see each other, and because she and Abel never have, they have some beers together, but they don't go out and do drugs together and things. It's always she's doing it by herself, you know, in the darkness, and then Abel's experiencing the reaction.
Yeah, I want to talk about this about the her condition in as a part of your story in a minute. I'm going to take a break. If you joined us late, I'm visiting with Adam Jones about his debut novel, Fate Ball. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Adam Jones. Adam is, as many people in Chapel Hill know, is the owner and operator of a property management firm called Millhouse Properties. But on the side, he's been doing something else, and that is writing a novel. We're talking about his novel, Fate Ball. And Adam, you explained to me about how this relationship between a young guy who didn't have a lot of successful experience with women is suddenly finding that a beautiful, wonderful girl has fallen in love with him. And you were telling me about some of the problems that developed in the relationship.
Well, he doesn't understand, why she can't stop drinking or drugging. And
how does he find out that she is? What are the circumstances in which he comes to understand something that that the reader knows all along?
Well, he doesn't really see the writing on the wall until her behavior, and a lot of it's sexual behavior, but gets really off the charts. And they get caught, and one part in the book, they get caught in the middle of the gym floor. And he has to, you know, run off buck naked trying to hide, and she is oblivious to hiding at all. And then another.
So they're. Set this up just a little bit more. They slip into the gym when they think it's empty.
When it's empty.
It turns out people come in to use the gym and they find them.
Is that
what happens?
So she wants to, you know, get frisky in various, you know, unusual places. So they go to the empty gym, not knowing that the girls' basketball team has got practice scheduled, in just a little bit. And so they kind of get caught with their pants down, literally, and the whole basketball team has come in. And so in that part of the book, they get busted, but it doesn't faze Ava. And Abel is upset about things and remorseful, and he's seeing that she's not remorseful at all or doesn't feel bad about any of this behavior. And that's when he starts to see that it's kind of beyond what he can control. And then ultimately, he finds out when they end up breaking up, he just he's told by Ava that he was just kind of a plaything.
I want to get to the breakup in a minute because I think it's the strongest part of your, one of the strongest things in your book or most moving things in your book. But before we do that, let's talk about this basketball court thing again. And you have told us, for those of you who joined us late, he told me earlier that this fictional book is based largely or substantially on factual things. So, but you had to make up the basketball court, didn't you?
I made up, you know, for the sake of my mother and others, I've made up, I say the book is about 75% fiction and 25% true. A lot of things, really the one of the few true things in there is the meeting when they're at the fraternity house and she jumps on him. But beyond that, anything that's physical is pretty much made up. You know, sometimes I wish that I didn't have to make up some of these things, but I did.
But the basketball court's made up.
The basketball court's made up.
I mean, because this is the kind of, I mean, you know, we all have different kinds of dreams and nightmares. and being, many of us have these things where we are all of a sudden naked in the midst of a whole public.
Right.
You know, so maybe this came from one of your dreams, but it's not, it didn't really happen.
Didn't really happen. You know, I've heard of, you know, football field stories and things like that, so I've just moved it to a basketball court. Because I think this takes place in the wintertime, so the football field would have been pretty chilly.
Well, so they have these challenges, but your book is moving along in the story in the sense that from Abel's standpoint, he is devoted. He's devoted completely, really, to
right.
Ava. And so there's hope. The reader has some hope that things are going to work out. How do you demolish that hope?
Well, there's he holds on to hope throughout the book for the most part. The hope is pretty much demolished. If you jump forward, Ava's in a terrible horse accident and is badly injured. And at this point in the book, Abel is in California pursuing an acting career, and he drops everything to come back to help her. And she allows him to move to Charleston and visit her at the hospital and come see her daily to try to help her recover. And of course, Ava's family is floored that he would drop everything and fly clear across the country to help their
fiction or
their daughter.
Based on fact.
The fly across country is a fact part. But at some point during the recovery, because she's in the hospital for months and months and months, she gains some clarity because she's not using drugs because she's in the hospital recovering. So she gains some clarity, and at one point she tells him that as much as she appreciates him and loves him for what he's done, he needs to move on with her life because she knows in her heart of hearts that she is not going to get better. Once she's out of the hospital, she's going to go right back to what she's been doing, which is abusing drugs. And so she tells him in the nicest way possible to go live your life and just forget about me. And so that's really kind of the turning point where Abel does go and start his own life and then meets another woman who is the true love that he had been seeking all that time.
And this parallels your experience roughly.
I did go to California for a brief time and had a very unsuccessful stint as an actor. This girl that the book's based on was in an automobile accident, not a horse accident. Oh. So I kind of changed that a little bit. And I did fly back for her because they'd given her a 20% chance of survival.
Wow.
And then she survived, but then went right back to drugs.
Well, I don't want to disrupt the flow, but the breakup that I was thinking about as being poignant and I could identify with was another time earlier on in the relationship,
right,
when she was at one place in the summer and he was at another place.
Well, that was.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, that was when he was at his family beach house, and she was at her family beach house, and they're about five or four hours apart. Abel was supposed to go back to summer school, But before that, Ava was going to come up and visit for a weekend. So they'd have a weekend together before he started summer school. The telephone rings in the cottage, and the mother answers the phone, and it's Ava, who is canceling the trip. And Ava doesn't know why. She's a little bit, elusive about the reasoning. And so he hangs the phone up, upset that she's not going to come visit. And then he said, I'm going to go on down to see where, she's been talking about her grandmother's cottage and how beautiful it is on the Georgia coast. And so he decides just to lie to his parents that he's going to go back to school early. And he instead goes down to where Ava's cottage is, not knowing that she's going to be there. But then he actually kind of catches her. She's jogging as he's driving down the coastal road, and he stops and doesn't know why she's there. He says, I thought you were supposed to go to Atlanta for your friend, and why are you here? And that's when it all blows up. She gets caught in a lie, and that's when the whole relationship blows up, because it turns out that the reason she had been elusive that summer is that she had gotten back with an old boyfriend down at the beach, and they had been having a relationship. And so he knew that her elusiveness over the summer was meant something, but he didn't know that it meant that she was with another man, and that she was going to dump him. And so that's when the big blow up happens, and he kind of gets kicked to the curb and has to go off on his own. And she was going to run off with this other guy. And just says that Abel was a plaything the whole time.
This is what stirred me is the woman that Abel was deeply in love with had this wonderful relationship with, even though she was flawed. He assumed that she was devoted to him.
Right.
She showed that in every way. And then to suddenly find out that you're really just a plaything because she says you've just been a plaything.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I mean, this is just the most terrible thing.
Well,
all of us have lost friendships.
Yeah,
and it's terrible. But this was an extraordinarily poignant moment, at least for me.
It cut him to the core, and it made him question everything about the last year, and it made him question love in general, and not only this girl, but love in general, because he had put himself out there so much and opened himself up so much for her to be cut to the quick like that, just really rattled him, and it kept him pretty much away from serious relationships until he met the girl that he ends up marrying.
Well, if you joined us late, I'm visiting with Adam Jones about his novel, Fate Ball. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Adam Jones. Adam is a businessman in Chapel Hill, runs Millhouse Properties. He's written his first novel, Fate Ball, and he's been telling us a lot about it, and it's quite an interesting story, Adam. Before the break, we talked about one of the breakups. This, in my mind, the main breakup from the idyllic, I'm so in love and I've got this beautiful woman, and then he finds out that she really is running around and devoted to somebody else, and that he's just been a plaything. Mm-hmm. And but the relationship continues in a way, even though she has put him aside.
It does. He just can't shake her. It's one of those loves, and, I think many people can relate to a first love, whether you end up with that first love or not. That first love is hard to shake. So with Abel, this was his first love, and he just never stopped caring for her. He may not have been as madly in love as he was earlier, but he always cared about her, and since she was now an alcoholic and a drug addict and had been in this terrible accident, there was reason to be concerned about her. And so wherever he went, he never completely forgot about her. Sometimes you break up with somebody and never think about him again or not talk to him forever. But with this particular girl, he just couldn't shake her.
So he's still hoping that she's going to come back to him in some fashion? Is that what his hope is, or is he just kind of weirdly entranced with her, even though he accepts the fact that they're never going to be an item together again?
Well, I think he thinks there's hope. And you know, there's parts of real life that's not in the book because I didn't want to beat a dead horse. But in real life, this girl and I did get back together at one point, and I had to get approval from sisters and mothers, and the girl's father actually asked me if I was crazy because he said, you know, she's a piece of work and all this kind of stuff. So I was forewarned. And so we did get back together, and because I think I was thinking that there were so many wonderful things about her that I could maybe help bring that out and push the bad things away. But as happens in life, you know, she was good for a year and then she fell off the wagon. And, you know, every time she would fall off, she'd fall off worse than the time before. And so it really got to be bad. So we actually went to talk to someone, and the therapist said that if I wanted to be on this roller coaster for the rest of my life, then to stay on for the ride and hold on tight. But if I didn't want to be on that roller coaster of falling off the wagon every year, every other year, and all the things that come with falling off the wagon, which is, you know, adulterous behavior and all that, then I needed to just get the hell out. And so I thought about it for a little bit and just said, well, I just need to get the hell out.
So in the real life, you were really addicted to this woman. I mean, you'd not into drugs and alcohol, right, and all that, but this woman, even though you knew she was not good for you, she was
It was definitely an obsession for a while because, you know, we met when we were 19, and, the first relationship only lasted for a year and a half or so, and then we got back together before she really fell off the way. We got back together for like another year, and then like 15 years goes by, and we got back together again at the, you know, and but nothing really had changed with her. I mean, although she had gotten married, had children, gotten divorced, lost her children, and all these bad things happened, the 19-year-old in me was thinking, well, I think I can save her. And the only time in my life I'd ever been to therapy, I talked to this therapist about it. And at the time, this is a good segue, I was buying old houses and renovating old houses. And he
said, "Is it in Chapel Hill?"
It was in Chapel Hill. Uh-huh. And he said, "You're looking at this girl just like you're looking at one of your houses.
But you can fix her. She's a fixer-upper.
She's dilapidated. She needs work, but you can fix her." And he said that he was, unlike a house, you can't fix her. And he was right, and I couldn't. And once she fell off for the last time with me, anyway, that's when I decided that, you know, I just need to move on down the road.
You went cold turkey. And
yeah.
How do you, back to the book now, all of this is interesting and compelling, a story. But how do you take what is just kind of a life's adventure and turn it into, is this a love story? Is this a story about, you know, drug dependency? What is the point of, what did you find to be the point in the novel itself and of the book?
Well, I think it's a love story. And I think the lesson is that that you can, even if you lose love, you can love again. Some have thought it was a book about addiction, which it's not. I think it's a book about love with an addiction twist, but that no matter what happens to you in your life, that you can find that love again that you had always been hoping for. And I think it happened with Abel in the book, and it happened with me in real life. And but this is a book that, this is a story that I just thought needed to be told. And since it's been out there, a lot of people have talked to me about how they've been through similar relationships, which is kind of interesting. I thought I was kind of a one of a kind, but there's a lot of commonality out there where folks had either dated or married an alcoholic or a drug addict or someone who had some other obsession, and they had to cut loose and start fresh again, and it can be done. So I think it's really about love and love lost and how to love again.
Well, if you join us late, I'm visiting with Adam Jones. We're talking about his novel, Fate Ball. He and I will be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Adam Jones, a businessman here in Chapel Hill. He is the author also of a new novel, Fate Ball, and telling us a lot about the story and about how his own life intersects with the book. I'm curious, Adam Jones, about the writing of the book. And you mentioned earlier that you had written part of this book many years ago, and that I think what the story that you said was that your wife said recently, "I don't ever want to hear the name of that book again until you finished it."
Right.
And so how did you go about finishing the book?
Well, I give my wife Susan a lot of credit because she did kick me in the butt to get it done. But I told her, I said, I'm going to need some time away. I said it in Charleston and Savannah, and so I wanted to go down there and do some research. And she said, do whatever you need to do, just get it done, and don't talk to me about it until it's finished. And at the time, we had, I think, one little girl. One was an infant. Ainsley had just been born. But it did take going down to Charleston and Savannah for several different weekends. And also going up, I've got a farmhouse in Virginia that I bought as a writing retreat before I got married. And I've used it as a writing retreat over the last several years. But as I kind of picked my moments, and I did kind of some speed writing, for lack of a better term, I would get into a zone and just knock it out. I'm not one of those early riser, write for an hour kind of people. So I did take a few distinct trips to do the research in Savannah and Charleston. I did some other research with addiction and, some psychology, and then went up to our farmhouse in Virginia and worked on it.
So you wrote it in a week, in 2 weeks, or is...
If you consolidated all the time, I probably wrote it in maybe 3 or 4 months. If you took all those
in
days
spurts,
in spurts, when I was in Charleston years ago for one of these little writing trips, I'd go back to the hotel at 8 or 9 o'clock at night after having dinner, and I'd sit down at my laptop and start writing, and several times I'd just get into the zone, and I'd look at my watch and it'd be 4 or 5 in the morning, and I didn't realize I'd been writing for 8 or 9 hours, So that's when really some special things happened. And a lot of the Charleston scenes were written in Charleston in one sitting. And that doesn't happen very often. If you talk to a lot of writers, they're writing for an hour every morning or an hour at night. And with two little children and a business to run and other things, I just didn't have that ability. So I had to just write in chunks. And so luckily, I would get in the zone many times during those chunks of writing and really knock some stuff out.
As you were writing in these chunks of time, did you have your scheme in mind that what this book was going to be about, or did you have to write and write in order for the scheme to reveal itself?
I had the basic outline in my head. I don't make real outlines and all that. I would take notes if I when I'm driving, which I drive a lot. When I'm driving, I kind of write in my head, and if a really juicy nugget comes in, I'll pull over and I'll jot it down in my notebook and then go back to it. But for the most part, I had the outline in my head, and I would just write, and sometimes whole scenes would just materialize that weren't in my head, but it just kind of flowed at the moment, and so I just let it flow. But from the very beginning, I knew the basic outline, and the one kind of interesting thing was that in a Charleston scene, there's an Italian bakery, and when I was writing that, I wanted to, be realistic with the Italian and stuff, and so luckily there's, Google translations and all that kind of stuff, so I spent some time doing that, but all that was done in Charleston, and luckily I had a good internet connection because I could Google how to speak in Italian.
Let me ask you this. This is clearly part memoir and part fiction, and that the act of writing it is in, like, it's almost therapy in terms of I've gotten this down on paper and in a book now, and I've gotten this part of my life, and I can deal with it in a different way. So, I mean, whether or not the book is an economic success or anything, you've got that done. What about it? I mean, what advice do you have for other people who aspire to write a novel? Are you going to get rich doing this? Or is it worth the effort to get it all out? I mean, talk to me as an aspiring novel writer.
Well, it was worth it to me. I think this particular book was very therapeutic for me, even though it's funny because even though the actual relationship took place such a long time ago, it was a therapeutic exercise for me.
To really get it out.
And even though I did fictionalize most of the book, a lot of it is memoir-esque, but for some writers, if you've got a story to tell, it's probably a little easier to sit down and really make yourself tell it, and tell it in third person or first person, however you want to do it. And the reason I didn't do first person because I didn't want it to come across more nonfiction than it is. But I just needed to tell it. For some reason, I just thought
the story you had to tell,
get it off my chest and tell it. And I knew it well enough where I could divert it here and there. But for new writers, you've got to have a story. I mean, you've got to have an interesting story. And I think that everybody, if you haven't already been in love, you want to be in love. If you haven't dated somebody that had a problem, whether it was alcohol or just being a jerk or whatever, or drugs, this book might show you the best and worst of what love is and what love can be. But I think it's a little bit easier when you really got a passion for your story, whether it's fiction or nonfiction or whatever you want to tell. It's just a matter of sitting down and doing it. The biggest problem I think writers have is trying to find the time. And so my advice to everybody is just to sit down and start writing. Whether you have, 30 minutes or 30 hours, just start it. Because once you start it, like I said earlier, when I would look at the clock and there's an 8 hours had passed, once you start it and get on a roll, you can really get into it. And it makes you feel good to accomplish it for one thing, but then also for me to get this off my chest as a bit of therapy was a nice thing as well.
It's a cathartic kind of thing. I wondered, now that you've gotten this out, you've done it. You've done what you set out to do. It's an event of that makes your life different because you've recorded it and shared it. And I wondered if it's really accomplished the result that you hoped that it would, in the sense that now you've got it in a book and you're talking about it every day or regularly, and it brings it. You've got to deal with it every day, and can you set it aside and move on to other things easier for some reason that you're talking about it every day?
Well, I think that it is easier because now it's no longer, and it hasn't been for a long time, an emotional relationship. Now it's paper and hardback book. No one's going to get, it's hard to make money in writing, period. I think this book's successful, like you already said, because it's done. And so it's successful because it's already out there. And that's one of the hardest things with a book this close to your heart is putting that much of you out there and exposing yourself. But also on the non-emotional side, just putting a creative piece of work out there, whether you're an artist or a sculptor or whatever, everybody's a critic, and so it's a learning process.
Another set of heartbreaking things.
Right.
Well, listen, we're out of time, and I got to stop. I've got so many more things I'd love for you to talk about. Thanks for your book, and thanks for sharing it with us, Adam Jones.
Well, I appreciate it very much.
And thanks to you for listening. This is D.G. Martin. I'll be back here before you know it.